Welcome to everyone to our council meeting today. Thanks again to those who are participating at very late hours. I appreciate that very much. We do have a very full agenda. We probably will not finish it all, but things have been ordered so that the most time-sensitive things, I believe, will be covered in the time we have, and we'll definitely try to keep it no more than 2 hours. Glenn, would you please do a roll call?
Certainly, I will check. Pat Gomes?
Present.
Caroline Greer?
Present.
Edmund Chun?
Here.
Adrian Kinderis?
Locke, present.
Tim Ruiz?
Present.
Stefan Van Gelder?
I'm here.
Terry Davis? Terry's on the line, I know. Zay Jamil?
Present.
Mike Rodenbach? Christina Rosette?
Present.
David Taylor's not yet on the line. Waffle Rick Knobin?
Present.
Steve Wagner?
Present.
Rafik Damak?
Present.
Jim Drake?
Present.
Deborah Hughes?
Present.
We have apologies from Wendy Seltzer, who is traveling, and she might not be able to be on the call. Rosemary Sinclair? Mary Wong? Not on the call. Olga Cavelli?
Present.
Andre Koleshnikov?
I'm here.
Alan Greenberg?
Present.
Han Chuan Lee?
Present.
And for staff, we have Rob Hogarth, Liz Gasser, Julie Headland, Craig Schwartz, Margie Milam, Ben de Saint-Gervais, myself, Olaf Nordling, and Marika Koenig. Over to you, Chuck. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Glenn. And the next item is to update any statements of interest, and let me start it off. I'm actually going to give a declaration of interest, which is a new concept that likely will be introduced with the new procedures that one of our GNSO improvements working teams is working on. In item four of the agenda, which has to do with motion from the IDNG drafting team that Edmund and Rafik put forward. I VeriSign certainly has interest in that regard because of our, especially in our case, interest of putting forward IDN versions of our existing TLDs. So I would like to declare that right up front so that people know. And when we get to that item, Stefan has asked to take over the chair responsibilities. Does anyone else have any updates to statements of interest? Hearing no one, comments, suggestions, changes to the agenda? Okay. Note the status of the 21 April meeting minutes, that they were approved on the 5th of May. So let's go on to item two, the prioritization of the GNSO work. And there is a link there to the timeline as well as to the recommended projects list for prioritization. And are there any discussions about those two links before we actually consider the motion and open and have discussion on that?
Chuck, this is Christina. I have a question.
Sure.
I'm still not quite sure I understand, based on the original cover note, why the Who Is studies are excluded, and I've gotten an awful lot of questions about that from our constituency. So I was hoping that I don't know if David's on, but if one of the policy staff that could give another explanation of that could do that, I think that would be very helpful to me.
It's a really good question. It's not at all – let me comment first because I was involved in that prioritization team, and others on that team can do so as well. It was not excluded because it wasn't – going to be included later. It was mainly because it's really not in the council's hands as a project right now, so much as it is their staff is still gathering information. Now, who would like to add to that? And by the way, we could decide to add it if we think. Ken, are you on?
Ken's on, and Liz is too. You know, I kind of had misgivings about it, but I think because it was primarily a staff action.
Yeah, actually, Christina, we are getting to a place where we're going to have to make some decisions in terms of how do we move forward. It just wasn't deemed by the drafting team that it was a council project yet. As you know, we have requested funds for Who Is Studies, and if not today, in the next few meetings, it won't be today, but we're going to need to decide which studies to proceed with. As we'll see later in this agenda, there have been funds set aside for that. That's the best I can do. Ken, do you have anything to add there?
Yes.
Jamie. Go ahead, Jamie.
No, it's just to note that there is a table, too, that lists the ineligible projects that have a status. Who is pending is a pending status. But it's up to the council to change the status of any of a project that is considered pending, it can have a new status depending on the events and also on the decision of the council here.
And
so
it's
up to the council.
I agree with Jamie, but
the
I just
council.
Wanted to add, I think what, Christina, if I could guess your underlying concern, that it's not a reflection that somehow it's not a priority. It's more of a commentary on where it stands in the overall process and where the work burden lies. So I think Jamie's right. You know, any of these could change in status at any given time. You know, when the council, there's work for the council to do.
Okay. Yeah, that clarification is helpful. I think the real concern among the constituency was that its current status characterization would preclude it or somehow make it more difficult when it was time for work to be done, where there was time for the council to actually do something to kind of get it from one bucket to the other bucket. So that's that. And if I'm understanding correctly, the fact that its current status is "quote unquote" ineligible has no prejudicial effect as to its future status. As long as I'm clear on that, and that is in fact the case, then all's good.
That is the case. Ineligible just means ineligible for this specific prioritization exercise, because the council members themselves and the SG members that volunteer for working groups, et cetera, are not really involved in this one at this time.
Okay,
so it's
great.
Not competing for resources right now.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, good. Hey, very good question. Thanks. Does anybody else have a question or comment on this? Okay. Then I don't see any hands raised, so let's go to the motion. And the motion was made by Olga and seconded by Jamie. Olga, would you please read the motion?
Chuck, I'm sorry, I was on mute. Yes, I will read the motion. Whereas the GNSO Council at its 21st April 2010 meeting adopted a resolution and timeline to conduct its first work prioritization effort according to a set of procedures proposed Chapter 6 Annex, there's a link there, recommended by the work prioritization model drafting team, whereas the first step in the GNSO work prioritization timeline called for the ICANN policy staff to produce on or before 30 of April 2010 a recommendation of those GNSO projects that should be considered eligible and ineligible for the workfare retestation effort, whereas the ICANN policy staff prepared and delivered to the GNSO Council a recommended workfare retestation project list. There's a link there, including a cover letter with a link on 30 April 2010. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the GNSO Council accepts and approves the GNSO work prioritization project list, version 1.0, for use in all remaining steps of the work prioritization timeline that, upon completion, it's intended to culminate in a set of approved GNSO project ratings and priorities at the ICANN meeting in Brussels.
Thank you, Olga. And is there any discussion on that motion? And I assume everyone's looked at the list of projects. Hearing no discussion, is anyone opposed to having a voice vote on this? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 If anyone is opposed, would you please state your name? Same for anyone who abstains. So you're not going to abstain, Adrian, huh? Okay, thanks, everyone. So that motion...
Apparently I'm a squeaky wheel.
That's right. I saw that. Okay. So that motion passes, and so, Ken, why don't you just take a moment and describe the next steps on this process.
This is Ken Bauer. Thanks, Chuck. The next step is that I will be sending to the entire council a fairly simple spreadsheet and along with some simple, I hope, instructions that will guide you through creating individual ratings for the eligible projects that have been approved. And after you've finished making some of these ratings on the value of these eligible projects, then the spreadsheets will come back to me. I will consolidate and aggregate the data, and that will become input into the Brussels session as the sort of first step of collecting some input from council members as to what they think the value of these projects is. Is that helpful?
Yes, I think so. Ken, I see Jamie has his hand up.
Yes, I have a suggestion to the pending project as to explicit which event is it pending about. I think which future event would make the this project to change its status from pending to eligible. I think it would be good for everyone to know this and to monitor it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie. First of all, I think that the council at any time can decide to change that. And in approving the list we approved today, we're approving those that we called eligible for now and those not. We as a council could change that. Now, what actual actions would change that? I believe it would be, if we, for example, initiate an action on any of these items, for example, who is studies that came up earlier, and we decided to form a working group to pick out, decide which policies to, or which studies to pursue, whatever, that would be a new project that would be active, and then we would need to follow the procedures in terms of prioritizing that. Ken, did I get that right? Liz?
Yeah, and we could decide now to add it back in, I think.
Yeah, right. Did that answer your question,
Jamie? There is not a specific event from which this project is pending. I think, as I understand from your explanation, It's just a decision from the council, and that moves it to the other, to the eligible project list. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to move to an active project. It could move from pending to some other status as well.
Okay.
No. Okay.
So there is not a specific event. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Ken, on the timing of when that request for individual ratings will go out and how much time people will have, can you comment on that, please?
Yes, I'm going to have to look at my calendar carefully, but I think it starts actually tomorrow, the 21st, so that I'm going to be working on getting that material out today and tomorrow. And the amount of time, I think we allowed 15 or 17 days to complete it. I think we originally said 10, and then we extended it. I have to look up the exact date. But I think it's 17.
I think that's good enough in terms of the clarity. Where I'm going with this is that I think it's really important that we all understand that even though we as counselors are doing the ratings, it's understood and expected that you will be working within your own groups to do those ratings. So you're encouraged to get input from the individual stakeholders in your respective stakeholder groups and constituencies and et cetera. Does that make sense? Any questions on that? Okay. So in other words, we're not just asking you to do this in isolation, but encourage you to, and many of you already kind of know the prioritizations of your groups probably, but we hope that you will consult with your respective groups as you do that individual exercise. Any other questions or comments on that? Okay, let's go then to item 3, the GNSO Affirmation of Commitments Drafting Team Endorsement Process. And let me turn it over to Bill to, first of all, give us an overview of where we're at.
Thanks, Chuck. I don't think we're going to need 25 minutes on this, so I think people will be happy.
You don't have 25 minutes anymore. You only have 15.
That's good. I don't think we need more than 5, actually, to be honest. We, I think, have reached consensus more or less within the drafting team. And we'll have a process spelled out and a motion in time for the next council meeting, and we can have this little bit done and move on. Essentially, what we're going to try to do is simplify things as much as possible. The previous rather experimental process, we had 3 different documents. We're going to reduce that to 2, and we're just going to make the process very streamlined. So, under the new approach that we hope will be ongoing, then there will be people will submit their applications directly to ICANN, which forwards them back down to us. People who are submitting will fill out the additional GNSO requirements. These will be as before, but with 2 additions: one encouraging people to self-identify with a stakeholder group. Or indicate whether they don't, but that will simply be taken into account by the council, by stakeholder groups in deciding who they want to endorse. Nothing else to be done with that. And then secondly, a statement asking for affirmation that they have the specialized expertise required by their respective RTs, because some of them require different skill sets than others. The process will be straightforward. Before, we had 4 seats, one slot for each of the stakeholder groups, plus we had 2 slots that were for election, one of which was for unaffiliated people, and the other of which was a sort of open slot for competition. And there were various rationales for that, which I won't revisit now. But at the end of the day, the experience that we had with it indicates that it's worth simply dumping that process. It just made people excited and concerned about exactly how to work the system and all these kinds of things. And the value added really was relatively limited. The reality is, in any event, that the selectors are undoubtedly probably going to continue to pick the people that are endorsed by the stakeholder groups rather than give them somebody who was not endorsed by a stakeholder group and take away the endorsee. So it was kind of an empty gesture, and I think it doesn't make any sense. So given all of that, then what we will simply do then is that during each review team cycle, each stakeholder group will put forward the name of one person from the pool that has submitted applications that they endorse. Of course, a stakeholder group can decide not to endorse any candidate, or a stakeholder group can endorse the same candidate as another stakeholder group. That's fine. In any event, we will nominate up to four in the original, in the initial round. Now, the only question then that comes in is diversity. We had diversity language in the past. We will retain that language. It does say should, and unless the applicant pool does not allow, such and such should happen, so it's relatively soft. And the idea is that instead of doing this whole thing we were going to do before with an evaluation team, if the bottom-up process of each stakeholder group putting forward a name results in a list of four that doesn't meet our basic requirements in terms of diversity, the council then has the option to decide to add a fifth or even sixth slot by majority vote of both houses from the applicant pool. So in other words, we each do what we want to do. We put forward the person we'd like to have on there, and if it turns out that we've got a very homogeneous group, we can then decide as a collective that we want to add one or two more names to make the pool look a little bit different. But I would expect, again, that at the end of the day, the selectors will probably take the ones that have backing specifically from different stakeholder groups. And that's pretty much it. I don't think we need to get more complex than that, or at least that's the feeling in the drafting team right now. We could try to create all kinds of arcane decision-making processes and elaborate voting rules and have open slots that people are competing for and all that, but I think it's probably not really necessary for this exercise. We'll be asking, I assume, in each case for four slots on the review teams. Even if we're given less, this procedure will be fine, and then it's up to the selectors to decide which of the four stakeholder groups would not get somebody in a given instance. And I would presume that if they were to ever do that, they would be cognizant of that on the next round when they were filling the slate again. So that's basically the concept, where we are, and I think it should get rid of any unnecessary angst.
Thank you very much, Bill. Before we move ahead to the motion that's on the table here, are there any questions or comments regarding what Bill shared? Not seeing any, I will let's go on. Now, Yanis Karklins had asked the GNSO. Originally, his request was to get feedback.
Hello?
We seem to have lost Chuck. Or they've lost us.
I could fill you in until he comes back. Yanis asked for feedback on how many slots the GNSO wanted on the next two teams. And this would be Security and Stability and also Who Is. And we decided that we would simply ask for four again in each instance. And Wolf Ulrich has a motion to that effect.
This is Stefan here. Perhaps I can take over while Chuck he's probably been disconnected. Unless, Olga, you want to do so, I'm due to take over on the next item anyway. Olga?
Maybe we lost her.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm on mute. Sorry, Stefan, I couldn't hear you very well.
I was saying perhaps I should take over until Chuck comes back. I'm due to take over on the next item anyway, unless you want to take over.
No, please go ahead. I have to be on mute because my line brings echo and problems to the conference call.
Okay, am I back on?
Okay, Chuck's back.
Okay.
Good.
Have no idea what happened there, but anyway, I got dropped, so my apologies. So what I was saying is that Yanis had asked for input on the size and competition, particularly of the yes.
Chuck, this is Stefan. Bill actually explained that while you're away.
Okay.
So
thank you. Okay. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. And so the one question that we need to answer is how many review team members we recommend from the GNSO, and that's what the motion's about. So if there are no objections, we'll go ahead and go to the motion and ask Wolf if he would read the motion.
Yes, I'm happy to do so. The motion to approve the GNSO Council's expectations about size and composition of the review teams, security, stability, and resilience of the DNS, and who is policy, and to approve the GNSO Council's response to the draft proposal on the call for volunteers representing SOs and ACs for the affirmation reviews, security, stability, and resilience of the DNS, and who is policy. So, whereas on 22nd of April 2010, the chair of the GAC was requesting commenting from the GNSO regarding the size and composition of the review teams, security, stability, and resilience of the DNS, and who is policy. Whereas on 26 April 2010, ICANN staff was requesting comment from the GNSO regarding the draft proposal on the call for volunteers representing SO, ACs for the affirmation reviews, security, stability, and resilience of the DNS, and who is policy. The GNSO Council first asks that both review teams shall be staffed with four GNSO representatives, and second, asks the GNSO Council chair to forward his comments made in response to the draft proposal on the call for volunteers representing SOACs for the information reviews, security, stability, and resilience of the DNS, and who is policy, to the relevant ICANN body. That's the motion.
Thank you, Wolf, and that was seconded by Caroline. Is there any discussion on that? I don't see any hands raised or hear anyone, so is anybody opposed to a voice vote on this? Hearing no objections to that, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed, please state your name. Anyone abstaining, please state your name. Okay, that motion passes unanimously, and it's my responsibility to communicate with Giannis that decision. Thank you very much for to the drafting team in particular, and for Bill for leading that in terms of this. So the next steps in the next week or so, we will be seeing a written ongoing plan for selecting for endorsing review team candidates, and that then will be discussed and then voted on in our next meeting, which is on the 10th of June. Please, once that does come out, distribute it to your respective groups so that we can you know, be able to act on that on the 10th. That will greatly help the selectors in moving forward on this. Any questions or comments before we move on? Okay. Going then to item four on the agenda, and I will turn it over to Stefan to chair this portion of the meeting.
Thanks, Chuck. So we have just addressed the context of what we're going to discuss. Edmund was willing to present a report to the Council regarding the topic of item four, which is the IDNG recommendations, and there is a motion that we will be considering that has actually, there's been a friendly amendment proposed today on the council list by Christina for that motion. and I believe that Edmund has accepted it, but Rafiq, who was the seconder of that motion, has not. So we will need to address that when we come to considering the motion. But perhaps, first of all, we can ask Edmund to fill us in on the topic that we're discussing. Edmund, are you on?
Sure. Thank you, Stefan. First of all, I think you know, it's always good to have lots of discussion, and but I want to sort of ask Stefan and others if it's possible, you know, we could, if we could focus on a little bit first on the substance of you know, what the issue is about, and have a little bit of discussion and try to come to a sort of understanding of what it's about and what we're proposing first, and then we can move on to a process discussion. I understand, I was looking at, there was a lot of discussion about process, and perhaps, you know, try not to mix. I understand it, you know, somewhat intertwined, but still, you know, I think it would be more useful to first talk about the substance, what the issue is about and what we're proposing, and then try to keep the comments and discussion later on, right after on the process. Is that, does that work for you, Stefan? I guess
yeah, that's fine. I was my intent was for you to present your report so that everyone is up to speed, and then open it up for comments before going to the motion. And I'm sure you know, people will want to comment both on your actual report and the sure. subject matter that you're presenting, and the process comments that have come on the list today.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot. So, about the issue itself, the IDNG group, let me give a very quick background. The IDNG was created when we started talking, brought up the issue about the possibility of perhaps looking at a track for IDN GTLDs, and one of the possibilities is looking into issues about if it happens to be a confusingly similar string, is that an issue that is a separate track it could handle, which after a long while, and there were different discussions in the IDNG itself, it sort of came to a particular discussion, which is specifically about the issue of one of the recommendations from the council, from the GNSO, which is confusingly similar string, and to avoid confusingly similar string. The issue itself that we identified is that there are certain situations where, quote-unquote, if you look at the string itself, if it's confusingly similar to an apply for string, it might not be an issue because perhaps it's the same applicant, it's the same registry operator, or, you know, there's arrangement to avoid user confusion. Even though the string itself may be confusingly similar, the context of which actually enhances user usability. And that's especially true for IDN TLD situations. A lot of the IDN TLD situations may fall into this situation. And therefore, the group went on to consider the issue and took a look at the current version of the DAG, and identified that in the current version of the DAG, it in fact is an issue that, regardless of the context of an application, if a string, just looking at the string itself, is considered to be confusingly similar to an existing or to another string, then the application essentially is rejected or not further looked upon. So this recommendation came out because of that realization. In fact, that realization, we in the IDNG discussion, we also involved staff who's working intimately with the DAG that also understood that if such a situation occurred, it is very possible that the application would be thrown out without further consideration, even if it's, you know, that apply for by the same registry operator. So we identified an issue, and we are trying to address the issue. We did not. The initial thought was to create a working group to address the issue properly. There might be many different ways to do it. But I think the group also thought that the group never came to a consensus of actually creating a working group, but thought that there is a quick fix that is not a policy discussion and could be implemented by staff by making fairly simple acknowledgement to this fact and then moving on to for it to be resolved in the extended evaluation period. So that's sort of the background of the motion and the recommendation. It is that there are situations where the string itself may be confusingly similar, but the context of an application could be such that, especially with the IDN TLD situation, could be such that it actually helps the user. It actually, you know, does not present a detrimental confusion. In those situations, it could and probably should be dealt with in the extended evaluation period. And you know, this is a note to board and staff that the DAG should reflect that understanding of the original policy. We don't feel that there is a policy change. We feel that it, you know, it was an implementation direction that the staff took that you know, created this issue, and therein lies therein basically is the substance of the motion.
Thanks very much, Edmund, for that explanation. Don't go away because people are already lining up to ask questions, and I'm sure they'll be asking you questions. Just before we do move to those questions, can I just ask, because it will, I want to get a feel of for whether Rafiq is okay with the friendly amendment, because it will change things the way we deal with this agenda item if he's not. Rafiq, if you're on the line, can you just give me an idea about that?
I don't see it as a friendly amendment.
So you're not okay with that?
No.
Is that what you're saying? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I say that I don't see it as a friendly amendment.
Okay, thank you. We'll come to that hurdle when we get to it then. So, Chuck, you're first in the queue, I think.
Yes, I sent a message about to the council list about an hour and a half ago, referring to section 2111 in the string similarity review in DAG 3. And so if somebody wants to pull it up, you can actually see what I'm referring to. And I have a question for Olaf. Olaf, I believe that what you had said before, that on this issue, at least to the IDN G team, is that if a string was found to be visually confusingly similar in the initial evaluation, that it would be rejected. And Edmund said that in his comments just now. But when I look at this particular language in section 2111, it actually uses the term the probability of detrimental user confusion. So it seems to me, and I'm asking you whether I'm off base or on base or whatever on this particular issue, that the independent string similarity panel would need to look at not only whether there's visual probability of visual similarity confusion, but also whether that is detrimental based on the language that's in the DAG right now. Am I incorrect on that?
Chuck, you're asking Olaf, right?
Yes, I am.
Olaf, are you on?
Sorry,
I was on mute. It took a while. So here I am. And detrimental user confusion. Now, one could ask oneself, is there any non-detrimental user confusion? That approach has not been taken as it stands right now. So if there would be, two strings would be considered visually confusingly similar. Well, that's it at it as it runs right now. It would also be the case that if a string would be visually confusingly similar to an existing top-level domain, it would be rejected at that stage. So that conclusion is correct. On the other hand, invoking the IDNs, with the current situation, there would be very few cases when a new IDN string applied for would be considered visually confusingly similar with an existing ASCII string. I think that would merely be, if it happened to be so, in Cyrillic script versus ASCII or in Greek script versus ASCII. But the conclusion is correct. I mean, there is no provision for saying that, oh, there is user confusion, but it's not detrimental. If there is user confusion, there is user confusion, and that's sort of the line of thought that is followed right now in the DAG.
Thanks very much.
Was that clear?
Chuck, are you okay?
Thank you, and I think that's the concern that the IDNG had, so appreciate that.
Thanks very much, Chuck. And Olaf, Christina, you're next.
I have two questions, one for Edmund and the other IDNG members that are on the council, and then the second for staff. And I should just preface this by saying that if you look back at the comments on DAG 1 and DAG 2, there was a significant amount of comment from the trademark community about the fact that relying solely on visual similarity and tying that finding of visual similarity in large part to this algorithm would likely result in significant numbers of false positives, which if the idea is to introduce innovation, et cetera, into the root, that eliminating strings at such an early stage on false grounds is frankly counterproductive. So one of the things, as I put in my question to Edmund, and I'm not really quite sure I understand the answer, is that the IRT recommended that there's two ways to deal with this problem. First, you, instead of just cherry-picking from the user confusion standard, which was adopted from consumer protection and trademark law, instead of just cherry-picking the visual similarity component, that you also add similarity as into sound and meaning, and you also create an opportunity for a request for reconsideration as opposed to an extended examination. I don't think there's any strong feelings one way or the other about whether that's done as extended examination or reconsideration. But I guess my question really is, that would have been another way to go about it. In other words, if you broaden the requirements that have to come into play for finding of confusing similarity, you've got to meet all three factors. As a general matter, you're likely to narrow the pool of strings that are going to be rejected. So I'm curious as to whether the IDNG talked about that, and if so, what their reasoning was for rejecting it, which is my understanding. And if they didn't talk about it, if that's something that would be worth considering. The question for staff is that...
Christina?
Yeah?
Perhaps you can stop there, let Edmund respond, and then come back to the second point.
Sure.
Thanks.
Sure. Thank you, Stefan. I don't think the IDNG specifically deliberated on the specific aspect that you mentioned, Christina. But I think everyone had the IRT report in our background. I think it's sort of a little bit different because we're talking about a situation where in the IRT case it's the string we're always talking about the string itself, but in this case we're talking the string and other context and the operator, and I think that sort of is where the existing DAG or part of the IRT did not quite touch on, and I'm not sure whether I'm touching on the right part. I don't think we're intending to reject what the RIT was talking about. It's just that I think this is a very specific issue on a context for which a confusing symbol string could continue, that was sort of the rationale. Stefan or Chuck or anybody else that were participating in the group can perhaps add to that.
I won't be making any comments while I'm chairing, but
Chuck
or maybe you can ask Christina if your answer is okay with her.
Well, I guess my question is, and this goes back to something that I posted on the list, is, you know, is this exception really intended to apply where, even though there would otherwise be a finding of confusing similarity, that there is in fact a conclusion that there is not going to be any probable likely consumer confusion, user confusion, because of who the operator is or whether there's an agreement in place with the operator? And Chuck had responded on the list, no, that's not the case. It's intended to cover more broadly. But, Edmund, if I'm understanding your answer just now correctly, it sounds almost as if it is intended to really only cover those very particular set of circumstances where, by virtue of who the operator is, there will not be any user confusion. So I just, you know, substantively, I really have to have clarification on that point. I mean, are we putting together something that is really intended to benefit just a very narrow universe of potential applicants, or are we going to, you know, if we're going to start making exceptions, are we going to allow everybody to participate?
Okay. I get that
a little
bit better. Sorry. Thanks.
Sorry. Yeah. Can I go to Chuck and then back to you?
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah. And Edmund, sorry, I probably should have let you go first. I don't think I heard Edmund say that the IDNG only expected this to apply to the narrow cases. I think that's all we focused on were those. Is that correct, Edmund?
Yep, that's sort of what I wanted to say as well.
Okay. So
but why?
In other words, it's not just the cases where it's the same operator. Well, in other words, I don't think Edmund disagrees with my response on the list. Did that make sense, Christina?
No, it does.
Yeah,
I'm now concerned that all you all really cared about was finding a way that the legacy operators wouldn't get their IDN strings kicked on a visual.
That's not the case, and that's the part I wanted to respond
okay.
on.
All right.
And it's that a couple of things. One is that you asked whether it's specific on that. I think both Chuck and I, what we mentioned is that this is one of the possibilities, and that's why we push it off to the extended evaluation so that the extended evaluation can take a look at the whole context of the situation and make the decision. This is one of the things that we have identified. There could be others. That's one point of it. The other one is that it's not really just for, you know, current situations, current existing TLDs. If the condition continues, what is to be considered is that even in the same round, if you put in two applications for two strings that are considered to be confusingly similar, they in fact became a contention set. All right, so you would have to either bid against yourself, or you would have to decide to not take one. Right, so that is also an issue. There is the issue of, let's say, .Asia putting in an application for .Asia, and it may be considered confusingly similar, and it would be rejected. But it also could be, for example, .Arab and .Arab, one in ASCII, one in Arabic characters, where they would be declared a contention set. And once they're being declared as a contention set, then, you know, it's the situation where only one of them can eventually exist. So it's not really just confined to, at least the way that I see it, it's not really just confined to the quote-unquote legacy TLDs.
J- Just to let you know, guys, I'm supposed to be keeping time here as well. We've got 7 minutes left on this item. Christina or Chuck, did you want to come back to this point, or can we move on?
I'll let Christina go first.
I'm fine with this answer. I guess the question that I have for staff is, you know, Tim had raised the question of the list of, well, if we go through this, notwithstanding the process concerns, what's the likelihood that this will happen? And, you know, I don't know that there was ever really any clear articulation as to why the IRT recommendation, which was different but kind of was aimed at the same general problem, and didn't really draw any criticism, why that didn't go in, and if that rationale would apply to this too, because otherwise I don't see why we're wasting our time.
So perhaps Chuck wanted to come back to the earlier point. Maybe you can do that, Chuck.
I agree with you, Christina, that should apply as well. I want to come back to Olaf's statement. You know, he made the statement that there might not be very many of these situations. Well, that may be true, but if there's one that comes out as a false positive, regardless of the reason, there should be a provision for that. And right now, there is not. If two strings are eliminated in initial evaluation, which only looks at visual, then they're out. There's no opportunity to deal with that problem, and there needs to be, in my opinion.
Thanks, Chuck. Can anyone from staff answer Christina's questions with regards to the IRT?
Well, this is Olaf here, and I think we've responded to that pretty well, that the first initial evaluation assessment of confusing similarity is, for practicality reasons, limited to visual similarity, while the full range of similarities can be addressed in objection procedures. We want to keep the processing time and costs low, and this is a way of doing it. May I also comment on Edmund's statement that, well, .Arab and .Arab, one in ASCII and one in Arabic script, well, they would never, with the way we have conceived initial evaluation and confusing the similarity assessment there, found to be confusingly similar in the initial evaluation. Quite clearly impossible. So from that perspective, when it's across scripts, it's very rare. If it would be .com, an example, and .c0m, they would be considered confusingly similar. And, all right, I give you that, Chuck. Well, if you apply for .com from VeriSign side, it won't make it through the initial evaluation.
And that's my point, Olaf, and I would use .kom instead of the one you use, but that might not be detrimental at all, and in the way it's offered, and that's the concern.
If I understand Christina's concern correctly, and Christina, please correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying that that would give priority to VeriSign for asking for a .com instead of a .com, but no one else could because they would be blocked. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, it's partly that. It sounds as if, just listening to how the discussion evolved, how this decision to put forward this motion came forward, is that it's really originating from, you know, Edmund's reference to Asia and, you know, Chuck's declaration of interest. I just have real concerns substantively that if we're going to start introducing something new, that we do so in a way that is clear and coherent and isn't going to be viewed, or doesn't have the potential to be viewed by some of the community as you know, for those of you familiar with the American political system, as just pork for, you know, the constituency. I mean, I just have issues with this on so many levels. I don't even know where to start.
Okay, thanks. Edmund,
I'll get back in the queue. Never mind.
Sorry, Chuck, I didn't hit. Are you?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Edmund, is it okay if I go to Adrian? I've got 2 minutes left on this item, so we're obviously going to run over a little bit, but I'll try and keep it on time as much as I can. Otherwise, Chuck will be angry with me. So thanks, Edmund. Adrian.
Thank you, Stefan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, great. So my question is to Chuck. If I'm understanding the terms correctly, Chuck, wouldn't given your declaration of whatever it was, certainly not independence, but whatever it was at the start of today, of interest, thank you, won't all of VeriSign's applications be confusingly similar?
First of all, we're talking about the initial evaluation, although, as Edmund pointed out, it could apply in the dispute resolution process as well, or the string contention issue. In visual similarity, no, it depends on the script, like Olaf said, okay, if you're just looking at visual similarity. But there are some instances, some possible instances of visual similarity that could be eliminated if all they're looking at is visual similarity without any regard to whether it's detrimental or not. And that is the point. It's not the point of favoring existing registries or new TLD applicants in any particular way. The point is that if there is no detrimental user confusion, they shouldn't be eliminated. We should be looking out after the users, not just some technical requirement, whether they look visually similar.
Adrian? Are you okay?
I'm okay. Thank you for checking.
Okay. See, Mike and Tim have got their hands up. So, Mike, please go ahead.
Just, real quick, I'd just like to respond to Christina a little bit. This is an issue. I've been on this work group team, and something that I've supported. I support this recommendation. I think the BC does too, obviously. And, in fact, we asked for something similar to this in our previous written comments to the DAG because we think that it would really help to eliminate confusion if, in fact, confusingly similar strings are run by the same operator, but that's generally a good thing rather than the converse where multiple operators are running.
Mike?
That was not me, but I'm finished. Thanks.
Okay. Tim?
So if there are, just to make sure I understand it, and I was actually trying to follow this working group and was on the list, and now I'm getting confused. But just to understand how it would work, so if there were, say there were, excuse me, an applicant who, or two applicants, each with the same string, and that string, it was determined that string was confusingly similar to an existing string, one of those applicants had a relationship or an agreement with the existing string, the other one didn't, and so that went through this extended review, and it was determined that agreement or condition was, kind of removed the concern about detrimental harm or whatever. Does that mean that, I take it that doesn't mean that the string goes forward into a contention set, but that the other applicant, since they don't have that arrangement or agreement, gets dropped out of the process. Am I understanding that correctly?
Who are you asking? Because I'm not sure I even understand the question.
Chuck or Edmund, who seem to understand it the best.
Okay. Who's the person that's just put their hands up? I can't read that. Is that Kurt?
Yep, that's Kurt.
Please go ahead, Kurt. I'm sure you've got an answer.
Well, I don't have an answer to Tim's question. Well, I kind of do. I think, it's Edmund's proposal, so he's best to answer that. I was actually going to make a different comment. So,
Okay. Edmund, do you want to answer Tim, and then we'll go back to Kurt and probably cut it off there?
Sure. I guess if I understood Tim's question correctly, and if you look at the existing DAG, it would mean that both applications would be rejected. What you're saying is that if this recommendation is implemented, which, you know, at least in my perspective, it should have been the understanding all along, then the applicant who can make sure that the user confusion part detrimental confusion is being handled appropriately would be able to proceed. That is the understanding. I think that's the intent of being able to do these kind of things. Like I think the one of the examples. Sorry, I go back to what I said earlier. I was responding to Christina, and therefore used those examples. But if you use an example like let's say take cafe. And cafe with the accent, then the situation is that yes, the one that who would not create, who would have processes in place, who would not create detrimental confusion, would be able to continue to use, would be able to proceed and use the TLD, whereas the one who doesn't have those procedures and processes in place should not be able to proceed.
Thanks, Edmund. Compliments on your accent in French. Kurt?
So I've read this with interest and followed the board, followed the GNSO emails on this. And if we receive a letter from the council like this, we'll certainly give it due consideration and I'll certainly get opinions from staff and from the board, and so we'll do that. But I wanted to offer some initial impressions, and that is that I think in effect it's either a change in policy or raises a set of complex policy issues. Some of them are if there's there's an inference here that if the same operator holds both strings, then addresses typed to either string would go to the same place, and therefore user confusion would be avoided. But in fact, there's no technical solution yet to make that happen in the DNS. That through efforts, you can make them go to the same looking place almost all of the time, but it's not settled yet that could actually occur. And then there's another, because it can't be perfect, there's another set of difficulties or complexities in how do you enforce a requirement where the registry makes a pledge or is obliged to have both addresses go to the same place, and under what conditions could they go to different places. So if two strings are very similar, but they're in fact in different languages, do they go to different language TLDs or do they go to the same one? Another issue would be if you had a similar looking string, would trademark holders having a name in one string feel obliged to register a name in the second string? So would there have to be a set of defensive registrations having to do with the second string because there might be typos because it's visually confusing? Or, what does the registry charge? Does the registry charge zero and grant both, domain names in both strings or what? So I think there's a lot of ramifications to this, and it's really not a procedural workaround, but rather it's a new policy that allows visually confusing strings under certain circumstances. And so what are those circumstances and what safeguards need to be invoked so that at the end of the day we don't have user confusion, increased costs to name holders and the like? So that's Kurt Fritz speaking as an individual, and but if it's voted to send this letter to the to staff and board, you know, you certainly won't just be getting my opinion back. You'll be getting a joint opinion. But I would, I guess at the end of the day, my recommendation is to consider the ramifications such a change and, build a more complete policy around it.
From the other time, but you don't. Do you have something else to say, or?
Who are you talking?
Okay, Chuck and Edmund. I had meant to cut this off after Kurt, but Chuck, if this runs over, I can blame you. So go ahead.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, we have some margin that we'll just have to deal with some other things later in the agenda that differently as was planned. So, Kurt, I don't think what you're saying is. First of all, I think what you're saying illustrates there is some complexity with this. There's not a simple answer, and I think that's why the IDNG said, well, one way of dealing with this is to at least allow extended evaluation so it can be looked at. It's not as simple a matter as just looking at whether it be visual similarity or even later in the process, similarity with regard to semantics or sound or anything else. The key issue, and I believe the intent of the GNSO recommendations in this regard, was not just to eliminate strings because they were confusingly similar. If you go down in the background information, it's really, is it causing a problem for the users? Actually, some strings could be offered that are confusingly similar on the surface, but it's actually helpful for users. It's a service for the users. And what staff has done and the way they're implementing this, they're ignoring the detrimental word that is your own use of the word in the DAG and not looking at that. And I think you have to look at that. And because of the complexity, it may need to happen, like is suggested here, in the extended evaluation rather than in the initial evaluation, but right now there's no provision for even allowing for an exception. That's a flaw, in my opinion.
Stefan? Hello? Am I still on?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yep.
Okay. But Stefan is off, I guess, but Chuck is done. I guess I'll go on with my comment. Chuck,
I'm back.
Sorry. Thank you. I sort of echo part of Chuck's what Chuck mentioned about that, and on Kurt's caution, I would say that really there's no difference in terms of Kurt what you worry about. Because as Chuck actually also mentioned, the same issue, the same quote-unquote policy considerations that, Kurt, you're worried about would happen in the extended evaluation process for confusingly similar strings that are not just visually anyway. So this is not something that is created, this is not a complexity that is created because of this recommendation. You already need to deal with this issue when you consider a confusingly similar string that's not only visual, that's not visual, maybe pronunciation or meaning or other types of things, when you go down the path where it gets into extended evaluation. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands that this is not something, what Kurt mentioned as a complexity isn't new. It is something that staff will have to grapple with down the road anyway. It's just that it's brought forward a little bit in sense that some of those visually confusingly similar ones would need to get into extended evaluation as well and also dealt with at that point. So I guess I just wanted to point that out in that I don't see it as a change in the policy. I do think that in these particular issues might need or should have additional policies created around it, but I don't think it's something new.
Okay. Thanks, Edmund. Adrian, and then Alan, I see you've put your hand up. I will get to you, but please be very quick.
My hand is still up from last time. I'm now dropping.
Oh, I thought you just asked a question on the chat and you wanted to ask it again. Sorry.
Oh, Alan. Okay. I'll ask it again then. Yes, sorry. Chuck, did you raise this issue in the comment period for the DAG?
Yeah. This issue's been raised many times. The registries did many times.
And so why hasn't it been incorporated into responses from the DAG?
Are you asking staff that?
I'm asking what your opinion of that answer is.
Well, I think Olaf answered that earlier when he said they were trying to keep it simple and so forth. Simplicity is good. Keeping down costs is good. But if it doesn't fulfill the recommendations that the GNSO made, then I think we need to deal with it.
Okay. Kurt, is your hand still up? I guess not. Alan, please be very short.
Very quick, just a question. If the same string were to be applied for in simplified and traditional Chinese, would that be considered confusingly similar and therefore rejected?
And you're asking who?
Edmund, perhaps, or someone. I mean, if the answer is yes, we have, then there's clearly a major problem that has to be addressed.
Well, I think that should be passed on to staff, actually. I mean, in my view, that does present a problem, and you know, I don't think we're trying to solve the problem with this, but that is one of the problems, and has implications with what we're recommending.
But having just allowed it in CCTLDs, we would not want to make it illegal and impossible in GTLDs. That's why I asked the question.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I think we'll have to move on to the motion now, and because there's an amendment in front of us that has not been accepted as friendly, we will have to consider that amendment first. Christina, can you just perhaps word that amendment or tell us exactly what the wording is, because you just asked a question on the list. But it's not a formal text for a friendly amendment proposal.
Stefan, I think it's probably better that I just, in the interest of time, withdraw the motion, because on further reflection, even if the amendment is added, I'm still going to vote no. So
I really appreciate that. Yeah. Thanks very much, Christina. I appreciate that. So we'll vote on the motion itself then. The amendment that was proposed having been withdrawn by the proposer. Edmund, could I ask you to read that motion, please? Please go ahead and read it. But just the motion, not the letter.
Sure. Where is the draft applicant guidebook version 3? Does not include an option for an extended evaluation for strings that fail the initial evaluation for confusingly similarity and likelihood to confuse. The IDNG drafting team established by the GNSO Council has discussed various circumstances where strings that may be designated as confusingly similar in the initial evaluation may be able to present a case showing that the string is not detrimentally similar to another string. The GNSO Council, in Recommendation 2 on the GNSO Final Report on the Introduction of New GTLDs in September 2007, intended to prevent confusingly and detrimental similarity and not similarity that could serve the users of the Internet. The IDNG drafting team also discussed the possibility of creating a working group to further discuss the condition under which such non-detrimental similarity could occur and the conditions under which such similarity could be allowed. The drafting team was, however, unable to reach consensus on recommending the creation of such a working group at this time. Resolve the following letter be sent to Kurt Pritz and copy the ICANN board, requesting that Module 2 in the next version of the draft applicant guidebook regarding outcomes of the string similarity review be amended to allow applicants to request extended review under applicable terms similar to those provided for other issues such as DNS stability string review procedure.
Thanks very much, Edmund.
The letter.
Yeah, the letter is in the motion you can find if you follow the link provided. Is anyone opposed to, would anyone like that letter to be read, or is everyone okay with me just moving on to the vote?
Move on.
We need some discussion before the vote.
You want to? Chuck, what was that? Sorry.
Yeah, I also think that there were a lot of process discussion on the list that we haven't quite gotten to. So
I'm okay with carrying on, but
Stefan,
yeah,
we have a practice that if people need more time, if anybody requests more time on a motion, that we grant it. Obviously, DAG 4 is going to be out before we can deal with it again. But are we in a situation where we need to allow a little more time on this before acting on it? I'm getting that impression.
Well, would anyone be opposed to us delaying this to perhaps our next meeting, where it might be moot anyway? I mean, if we can it, as you say, Chuck, then effectively this motion becomes moot and we can come back to the topic, but the motion itself, because it references DAG V4, will no longer be usable.
Well, let me then specifically request that this motion be deferred to the next meeting, because I think there's still a lot of lack of clarity in terms of what this is, and I think we all need times to talk with our constituencies in that regard.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. So we have a request from one of the stakeholder groups to defer. That's what we'll do, and so we will defer that to the next meeting. At this point, I will hand the meeting back over to Chuck, and sorry for running over so much.
Yes, Stefan, you did a terrible job on that. Too much time,
thanks,
though.
Thanks a lot.
He and I knew that was going to be a problem, so good job. Thank you very much. Going to item 5 on the agenda, the joint SOAC working group on new GTLD applicant support. Olaf, could you give us a brief overview of the proposed charter?
With pleasure, Chuck. The charter consists of three elements. So to the chartered objectives, the operating procedures, and milestones. And the objectives, if I take it very shortly, are to identify to whom should dedicated support be orientated, what kind of support should be considered, and from whom should such support come. And there is preamble. This is rather general objectives. There was an additional objective put forward and very much discussed by the working group, and it was to identify how the application fee can be reduced and or subsidized to accommodate applicants that fulfill appropriate criteria to qualify for this benefit, in keeping with the principle of full cost recovery of the application process costs. And I read that out verbatim, since it was the last one that we managed to agree on in the working group. Operating procedures, well, that's stated to that they should follow the draft working guidelines of 5th of February. And the milestones are, in brief, well, we're in the middle of the processing. The weekly conference calls are taking place, and by the 15th of June, the objective to post a snapshot on the working group's plans and progress, and to have a session in during the ICANN Brussels meeting, and a final recommendation. Well, it cannot be before Brussels. That's the realization of the working group. Would have to be in mid-August. So that's a brief outline of it. If you want me to read it verbatim, I'd be happy to do so.
Anybody want it read in verbatim? Hearing no one, is that all you have? All off of that's good. I'm not questioning that, but I'm just wanted to make sure you were finished.
I consider myself finished.
Okay, good.
Very much
I thought
so.
You were, but I didn't want to assume it. So, okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments with regard to Olaf's overview of the charter? Okay. Then,
Chuck, there's two hands up in the queue, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at something else. Kurt, I think your hand is up from before. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. I'm sorry.
If you could put that down, that would be great, or some whoever has the control of that. Tim, go ahead.
Concern was in the charter in regards to the operating procedures that the charter proposes the working group use. It references the guidelines that are actually, I believe, just draft working guidelines, a draft of the working group guidelines that the PPSC work team has been putting together. I don't believe that has gone to even to the steering committee, let alone to the council. And we've been working from, you know, an interim set of working group guidelines. And so while I don't have a problem with anything else, but I think that this charter should be modified to refer to the interim working group guidelines that the other working groups are working with until the draft guidelines the PPSC work team is working on it have been approved. Does that make sense?
So Tim, your suggestion is that it should refer to interim working group guidelines?
Right, because the guidelines that they're referring to, well, I don't have any specific problem with them that we need to discuss. It's just that they are significantly more detailed and different than what we've been working with. And I think before we start using those, you know, they need to completely go through the process before we put them into use, my opinion.
So what is your recommendation with regard to a change to the charter as it's drafted right now?
That where it says operating procedures for the working group, that it should say the working group will operate according to the guidelines set out in the interim working group guidelines. And I don't know if there's a link you can put in there or not. I don't believe there is. It's just been being pasted into the charters as we go.
Okay. Now, Rafik, you're our liaison on that group, and Olaf, you're free to comment too. Do you guys have would you guys have any problem with that change in the charter?
If I may start to answer, I have a confession to make. I copied that link from another existing charter, so it's not something new from that perspective, but I'm very happy to change it to whatever you prefer. This was really in order to make it easy.
Yeah, Rafik, does that change to the charter sound okay to you since you're on that working group?
Yes, okay.
It's okay? So, yeah. Go ahead, Tim.
I was going to mention that if this is in other charters, we just need to, my personal opinion is we should watch that carefully going forward because, you know, again, these new guidelines that are being drafted are very detailed, have a lot of different, you know, requirements, provisions, et cetera, that haven't really been fully vetted through the steering committee, let alone the council, and I don't believe they should be being put into use. But I think we just need to watch that carefully.
Yeah, good catch, I think, Tim. And regardless of whether we put it in other charters, I think it's a good suggestion to fix it now. Jamie?
My question is if this working group is voted for, then this is a project that will be entered in our prioritized project list.
Not necessarily because this is a community-wide working group, not a GNSO working group. Now, again, like we said earlier when we were talking about prioritization, we can at any point make a decision to put it in the prioritization mix, but I think that's our call.
Okay.
Thanks for the question. Tim, did you have anything else?
No.
Okay. Rafiq and Olga, would you accept the – it's actually an amendment to the charter itself, not the motion, but would you accept that as friendly amendment? Rafiq?
Sorry, you mean the amendment from Tim?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's a friendly amendment.
Olga?
Yes, okay for me.
Thank you. Does anyone object to a voice vote on the approval of the amended charter? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, state your
aye.
Name, please. Any abstain, state your name, please. Okay, it carried unanimously. Thank you very much, and thanks, Olaf and Rafiq and Olga, who are working on this community-wide working group. Appreciate your efforts. Going then to item number six on the agenda, I would like to turn it over to Stefan to go through this item because he and Glenn have been working tirelessly on the schedule, and for those that haven't been involved in scheduling at ICANN meetings, it is quite a challenge. So I thank them and compliment them on their work. And Stefan, I'll let you give us an overview, and with just the note in as stated there in 6.1 that the agendas have to be posted by the end of the month, as you can see. Stefan, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. So you have the draft agenda up on the Adobe. Please have a look at that, and I'll just go through it as quickly as I can and maybe ask questions of some of you where Glenn and I still have points that we're unsure of. I'll concentrate on the Saturday and the Sunday, which are obviously important days for us. On the Saturday, we have... the contracted party's house has not requested a house meeting, so we have been able to start the day with a house meeting for the non-contracted party's house, then the VI, I should take that in order, the Vertical Integration Working Group requested a face-to-face meeting, and it became difficult to fit everything in, so we opted to put that in the morning on the Saturday. Now, we realize that's inconvenient for some of the people in this working group because they won't be there yet, but it was really the only way to accommodate both their need for a face-to-face meeting before their co-chairs meet with the council on Sunday, and the agenda items that we already had. So the non-contracted party's house meeting has been moved to just after lunch, and the day going on through the Saturday, there's really no other major points of interest apart from the the GAC, our traditional meeting with the GAC, which normally happens on the Sunday, but this time we had a request from Yanis, the GAC chair, to move that meeting on the Saturday because the GAC cannot accommodate it in their agenda on the Sunday. So we have moved that, please make a note of that, from the from Sunday to Saturday, 5 to 6 in the afternoon, and that will be immediately followed by our traditional informal council dinner, and the venues to be decided. We're still working on that. Moving on the Sunday... we have our traditional Sunday morning breakfast. That should be, we should be able to do that in the venue itself. As you know, Brussels is like Nairobi in that the venue is not a hotel, so no one will be sleeping on site, and there are issues with catering, but it appears that we're able to have catering for that morning breakfast and still have it at the venue, so that should be no problem for anybody. We'll then have the VI working group co-chairs addressing the council, and some a report from the RAP registration abuse group will be following that. The OSC and PPSC will then have their session before we move to a working lunch to prepare for the CCNSO-GNSO joint meeting. We'll then have a long session with Kurt on new GTLDs and a few sessions to close that day off and move into the dinner with the board, which will be happening on Sunday evening. Then going through the week, on Monday there's not that much that's directly linked to the GNSO. On the Tuesday, we have stakeholder group and constituency days.
Could I back you up to Monday for a second?
Yep.
On Monday, there is the joint GNSO-CCNSO lunch meeting, and I plan to initiate discussion today with Chris about topics for that, and I will also send out something to the council list today that asks for any input that any of you have or people from your constituencies and stakeholder groups regarding topics of discussion for that meeting. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Thanks, Chuck. So where were we? Wednesday we have the council open meeting, obviously, starting at 8, which is always a delight. And then moving on to and the gala evening, which is also always extremely nice. And then on the Thursday, we have something that we all need to discuss and perhaps come to a decision on. You'll see from the draft agenda you have up there on the Adobe that there's a tentative slot for the GNSO wrap up. Over breakfast. And why is that? Because the full meeting agenda has actually been turned around slightly for the Thursday. Normally there's a public forum in the morning. This time it's happening in the afternoon. And there are several sessions in the morning, as you can see from the spreadsheet in front of you. So trying to accommodate all that has meant that either we decide to have the wrap-up over breakfast, that's from 8 till 9:30, if I'm reading this right, and ask people to get up early for that, or we try and fit it in over lunchtime just before the public forum, or we run a full hour and a half over lunchtime and slightly encroach on the public forum, which I believe, if memory serves, is starting at 1:30. So really a decision needs to be made on that. What do people want to do so that we can finalize that part of the agenda? And that's really it, Chuck. Thanks.
Thank you very much for going over that so quickly, and hopefully everybody had a chance to look at that actual proposed agenda. Let's open it up for discussion, and I see Olga has her hand up. Olga? Okay, maybe she'll come back in later. Wolf, go ahead.
Hello?
Hey. Oh, okay, there you are. Go ahead, Olga.
Oh, sorry, I have a problem of mute on, mute off, and I get confused. One comment about the non-contracted party house meeting.
there may be conflicts in it overlapping with the OSC. I have been consulting with some members of the House, so I would suggest, and perhaps hearing from some other council members, if we can move it again to 9 a.m.
9 a.m. on what day?
Saturday, sorry.
So it would conflict with the VI working group meeting?
Yeah, both options are conflicting, but in consulting with other people participating, it could be better if we can move it again to 9 a.m.
So,
or maybe someone else has another comment about it.
Well, let me ask those of you who are participating in the VI working group, are you okay with the conflict there, or does that create more conflicts than the what's on the schedule now? Anybody want to comment?
This is Christina speaking personally. That having it at the same time as the VI working group creates more of a conflict for me than having it at the same time as the OSC. But, you know, I think we're looking kind of cumulatively among the House, and I don't know.
Yes, right. Okay, well.
Yeah, this is Tim. It would be the same for me. It would create more conflict.
More conflict with the VI working group. Thanks, Tim. Anybody else want to jump? Just feel free to jump in if you're on the VI working group and you have an opinion on this.
Well, I might just. Sorry.
No problem. Just saying it's the same with me. It's Mike. I definitely would need to be at the VI meeting.
Okay.
Sorry, this is Stefan. I just wanted to clarify that the only thing we're talking about is the non-contracted parties house meeting. There's just for Tim's benefit, there's no contracted parties house meeting.
Tim, you're crossing over to the dark side?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a secret, though.
Anybody else want to jump in on that before I go to the other people who have their hands up?
Yes, it's Wolf, so I'm... Well, it's the same point for me. So I would like also, if it's possible, I would like to have no overlapping between the OSC and the non-contractual parties house, since I'm a member of both of it. So if there is a chance, I cannot. I understand at 9 o'clock it's not possible, but maybe it could be shifted to another way. I have no solution yet, but if you don't mind, Stefan, to just think over whether it's possible or not to shift it.
Well, I'd also like to ask everybody on the call that's affected by this to try and see if you can figure out a solution that might work, because Stefan and Glenn have tried, worked very hard on this, and obviously they've run into some brick walls in some cases, so... So it sounds like there's quite a few, and probably even more, on the VI working group that would be conflicted on Saturday morning, those that are not even on the call now. But at the same time, Wolf's concern is a valid one, too. So let me challenge everybody to try and help Stefan and Glenn find a spot that you think might work better than either one of the ones that are on the table right now. The one that's on the agenda or back on Saturday morning. Am I incorrect in making a judgment that the Saturday morning one is probably not going to work, the conflict there?
Maybe I can address that, Chuck.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just to explain that we came to we chose that option when we discussed it during our council leaders call earlier this week with yourself, Olga, Glenn, and other staff people, and it became, for us it became obvious that if we did schedule the two meetings, the VI and the non-contracted parties house together, that would be a major clash for a lot of people in the non-contracted parties house, and we know they want to be involved in the VI. So, you know, we realize that the OSC is a clash also. At this stage, we have no other solution to offer you, Wolf. So I would like to echo what Chuck said. If you have any ideas, we'd love to hear from you, because really at this stage, the agenda is just, you know, difficult it's difficult to add something else.
It's Christina. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll get you in a second. Caroline, did you want to talk about this topic?
No, a different one.
Well, your agenda,
you'll hold on patiently. I'd appreciate that. Go ahead, Christina.
Sure. Very quickly, and I apologize, I'm going to have to drop off, but two schedule issues are questions, comments, is one, I'm wondering whether it's worth exploring the possibility of having the non-contracted parties house meeting on Saturday from 15:30 to 16:30. That might end up being the smallest potential overlap. And with regard to when we have our wrap-up session, I frankly have lost track of all three options, but the option that would have it overlap with any part of the public forum is the least desirable to me.
Thanks for that input. That's helpful. And rather than taking time now to deal with, I think Christina suggested a specific option. So, Stefan and Glenn, why don't we clarify that for the council list so that we can kind of get a feel, and we're just going to have to pick the least of evils, I think, on this one. Is that okay on that particular issue?
Yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Caroline.
Thanks, Chuck. I see that there's just 1 hour and 15 minutes devoted to the VI session on Sunday with Council. I don't know if there's any scope to extend that session. It doesn't sound like there's much movement there, but perhaps is there somebody on the VI group that could give me some comfort that that would be adequate time to discuss the issues that are coming up in that group?
Perhaps I should do that as well, seeing I'm the liaison to that group for the council. Really, the discussion that's been going on then in that group, that discussion has been going on for a while, and the aim of this two-hour slot is to have them finalize what the co-chairs will say to the council on the next on the Sunday. So, to answer your question, I think 2 hours is probably enough. It's not that the face-to-face meeting isn't really designed to allow the group to continue its actual work on the VI issue itself, but just to prepare for the council session.
Sorry, it was actually the Sunday session, the 1 hour and 15 minutes on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
That was more the concern than the Saturday session.
Sorry, I misunderstood you.
Do you think that would be enough time to discuss with council?
The co-chairs seem to think so.
Okay.
Okay. Is that all right? Thanks, Caroline. Any other comments or questions on the schedule? We obviously have a couple outstanding items here. One of them, the wrap-up meeting, breakfast or lunch. Christina did say that, and I kind of concur with her, overlapping with the public forum I think is not a good idea. But that's my own personal opinion, not a chair opinion, okay? And and then we also have the decision then on the non-contracted parties house. So let's try and wrap those up on the list, early enough next week so that we've got that all finalized in time. Thanks again, Stefan and Glenn, for all your work on this. I know it's a real challenge, so much appreciated. Going then to item six, and let me say to set expectations that I think this to be our last agenda item that we actually act on. I'll talk about the others before we adjourn, but with the goal to try and make this no longer than 2 hours, let's try and get item seven, the AGP policy questions discussed at least, maybe wrapped up. And Craig, are you on?
Yes, I'm here, Chuck.
Thanks, Craig, for joining us. And so we have several questions here, and the first one is, should the council consider modifying the AGP limits policy to no longer require semi-annual updates? And we have one coming up in June, right, Craig?
That's correct.
Okay. So I'd like to open up a discussion on this particular topic. If you would like to respond to that question, please raise your hand. While we're waiting to see who would like to respond, let me share the response from the registry stakeholder group. we would be comfortable with annual updates, but we don't think updates should be totally eliminated. Anyone else want to comment on this particular
Chuck,
question?
Chuck, it's Mike.
Go ahead, Mike.
I think it depends on the answer to question number two. If that question gets answered in the affirmative, then I would say we need to keep the six-month reporting. Otherwise, I'd agree with you and the registries that annuals seem would be sufficient.
So let me make sure I understand, Mike, so that if the answer to question number two, should the council consider modifying the AGP limits policy by defining those terms, be yes, then you would want it every 6 months?
Correct.
Oh, okay. I was just clarifying. So that's good. Thank you. Alan?
Yeah, I would support that, what Mike just said. If we change the rules, then we don't want to go to yearly reporting. Otherwise, yearly reporting, I think, would be fine.
Okay. Anybody else want to comment on the first question? We can come back to that after we talk about question two, because a good point was made there. So anybody else before we look at question two, and then I'll jump back to question one.
Chuck, just for clarity, you're doing the small bullets, not the big bullets right now.
That's well, you're correct. Yeah,
okay.
I'm doing, well, it depends what you call big and small, but
I'm doing them in order.
Okay. The first bullet, the second bullet, and then there's two. The two round circles should be sub bullets to the second one. So that's the confusion. It's the formatting of the agenda that makes it confusing. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the second dark bullet there. Should the council consider modifying the AGP limits policy by defining the terms extraordinary circumstances or reoccur regularly? And then there's two examples given there. Should instances of consumer fraud automatically be a legitimate use of AGP delete? I'll let Edmund or Caroline comment for the registries if one of them would volunteer. If not, I can give that. And Alan, is your hand still up on that question?
When we come to discuss it, yes.
Okay. All right. So, Caroline or Edmund, do you want to give the registry's position on the first sub-bullet there, the first example? You want me to do that? Okay. I'll do it. The registries do not believe that instances of consumer fraud should automatically be a legitimate use of AGP delete. What we're finding in our processing of the disputes that are filed is that if registrars do provide adequate backup to demonstrate fraud and so forth, and sufficient information, then they're typically honored. The exception is granted. If we turn this over so that all you have to say it was fraud, and you get an exemption, it becomes too easy to game, is what the registry's opinion is. Tim? Tim, are you there?
Sorry. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I was much more eloquent when I started, but anyway. The question, I just have a question, actually. Just if the council should agree that the answer to the second question is yes in some fashion, or, there should be some definition, are we talking about reinitiating some sort of policy process to modify the policy? I mean, we're not looking at just voting on these questions or something and then making a change, right? Or just what would the next steps be if the answer is yes to the second question, I guess?
Well, I think you're right that we would have to set up a process to do that. I think your assumption is correct there, if I understood it correctly.
Okay.
Craig, do you agree with that? Or actually, I guess it's a GNSO decision more than it is Craig's decision.
Yeah, not for me to answer.
Someone else, now, Alan, is your hand still up at this point?
My hand is still up, and I can, to some extent, address that question as well as what I was going to say. In the PDP working group or working team, we've been discussing the concept of a fast-track PDP for issues where, you know, it doesn't require the whole elaborate process, but still has the power of a PDP. We have not gotten anywhere into that process, but it's acknowledged that currently the GNSO has no ability to change things like this without going through the whole process from an issues report on. And clearly there are times when such things could be needed. In terms of the original hand up, I was going to support what registries are currently doing in terms of honoring fraud when it's documented, but not just the word itself. And I think in terms of changing extraordinary or defining extraordinary circumstances and reoccur, even if there were a practical way of doing it quickly, which there isn't, I would not support that unless there's strong evidence or indications that the registries are not using reasonable definitions on the fly. I like keeping it flexible.
Thank you, Alan. Helpful comment. Tim?
Yes, I guess that would be my next question. I mean, it very well may be that you know, some of my constituents are have concerns here, but I guess that would be my answer to these questions is just that we would need to have more indication, I think, that there's a problem or a very specific request, you know, to review this that the council would address. And I take it we don't have that yet, or am I missing something in that regard?
Craig, you want to respond? You've got your hand up, and can you also respond to Tim's question?
I'm sorry, Tim. Can you ask your question again? I was formulating my question for the group.
Well, it's just that before we get too deep into this discussion, I'm just wondering: do we have a formal request from the community that, you know, to similar to like an issues report request or something, that we revisit the this policy for these exceptions? And if we do, then wouldn't we need to get more data or information before we could actually make this call? And if we don't, then are we kind of jumping the gun?
Yeah, so, Tim, this is Craig. So I actually don't know the answer to that question. But what I wanted to kind of bounce back to, and maybe this is directed towards Alan and to Mike, is, you know, given the last two reports basically provide the same information and the same outcome in terms of the reduction in domain tasting or AGP deletes, I guess I'm wondering what's the reason to continue if the information is remaining the same?
Can I address that briefly, Mike?
Yeah. Yes, go ahead, Mike.
First of all, two reports is not too many. If it was four or five, I would see your point more clearly, Craig. Also, I mean, how much work is involved in putting those reports together? Could you just kind of speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, it's not a huge amount of work, Mike. But at a reduction of 19.7%, where else do we go?
Yeah, I hear you, but I think that there was still some concentration too among a few players for the, you know, remaining 0.3%. You know, I like to kill things completely.
Okay. Tim, again?
Yeah, and just to be clear, I don't have as much an issue with discussing the frequency of the reporting. I was talking more about the second question, because now we're actually talking about modifying the policy. Unless, of course, the reporting is a part of the policy, then I guess that might fall in there, too. But what I don't want to do is, you know, we have this big process, prioritizing work. So what I don't want to do is not invent work, but we start or initiate work on our own, before there's really any indication that there's an issue that our constituents or the communities really, really see or think we need to address. And you know, I don't want to, begin to pile on work without, strong evidence or strong concern in some fashion being expressed by the community that it needs to be addressed. As far as the reporting is concerned, I'm not as concerned with that, but I'm talking about more like the second question and on.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I think we're just about out of time here on this one. Greg, I apologize that we don't have definitive answers, but I think we've introduced the topic enough at the council level that we should be able to, zero in on these, on answers to these questions in our next meeting, and I'll make a point that we do that then. As far as your, I don't know what time in June you do the report, but if that means you need to do the report, I would suggest you go ahead and do it and allow us just one more meeting to try and zero in on the answers to the questions. And I would encourage everyone to try and be prepared in our meeting on June 10th to try and bring some resolution here. Certainly, I encourage discussion on the list if there are other issues. Any comments or questions before I head to a close? Okay. Thanks, Craig, and I apologize that we've had to defer this now twice. We at least got started this time.
Thanks, Chuck.
So Who Is Studies is going to have to be deferred to our next meeting. As I warned, my apologies, Liz. We are going to have to get busy on that in our next meeting and work on it again in Brussels, because it's going to be very important that early in the fiscal year that we start spending the money that may be approved in Brussels and get some studies going. But we'll talk about that more then. With regard to items 9, 10, and 11 on the agenda, please look at those. There wasn't much time allocated to them. If you have any questions about any of those items, please put them on the list, and any of us that can will respond to those items. Anything else before I adjourn the meeting? Okay. Thank you very much to everyone. Have a good rest of the day, and we'll be talking on the list.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chuck.